Welcome back to Red Receipt, a podcast by Antidote, the email and SMS marketing agency by people who hate boring email. We do a deep dive into the how and why of brand building, from blueprints to launch day, customers as community, and the detours in between. Big lessons and easy listening. I am super excited to have another great guest on the podcast today, our friend Simon Huck. Simon is the founder of Judy, the emergency kit that's ready for anything. After spending the last decade watching the world deal with emergencies, he realized the overwhelming need for better preparedness in disaster situations and imagined a better way to do something about it. Since launching Judy, Simon has built a world-class brand, gained a fan-like following, and flat-out made people feel safer along the way. He sits down with us today to talk about his journey, lessons learned along the way, and what it means to be ready for anything. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. So when you moved to New York originally, what industry were you getting into? And did you go to school and study something related to what you were moving to New York for, or no?
No. So I had always been fascinated by celebrity culture. And I remember when I was 11 years old, I had a People magazine subscription. I had an Us Weekly subscription. I would religiously watch every award show with my mom. I would watch the Grammys. I would watch the Oscars. I was fascinated by pop culture and celebrity life. And being from Ottawa, I had no access to anyone that was at all associated to that world. And just thought, oh, that would never be, you know, there's no way I could ever break into that. I didn't even know, I certainly wasn't going to be an entertainer. So I had no way of really figuring that out. And one day I was reading an Us Weekly, and there was a picture of Lizzie Groopman, and it called her a publicity princess. And it was talking at an event she was doing in New York. And it had attributed her clients to being Britney Spears and Madonna. And I thought, publicity princess, I am so in. I am so fascinated. So I called her office, and like, I was 20. I didn't know anything. I was like picking up the phone being like, hey, I would love to work for you. I'd love to be in PR. I had no idea what PR was. And the person who picked up the phone said, if you happen to be in New York, we'll meet with you, but there's definitely no job opening. We would definitely not hire you. You would have to come in as an unpaid intern. And I was like, great. Called my parents, told them I got a job interview. Flew down to New York the next day. I remember I was wearing this like ridiculous United Colors of Benetton shiny khaki suit. And I went into Lizzie Groopman's office. And Lizzie at the time was a very famous publicist. She was partners with this guy named Jonathan Cheban, who then became my partner years later. And they were like the hottest agency in New York. They were doing every major red carpet. They were doing Jennifer Lopez's birthday. They were doing Puffy's white party. And I was totally in awe. Like to this day, I'm like, oh my God. Like I thought this was, I'd won the lottery. And even just having the job interview. And I, for some miracle of a reason, they offered me this unpaid internship. And I moved to New York 4 days later. And I was currently kind of finishing my degree at Queen's University in political science. And that was the beginning of my PR career.
That is so crazy. Like, first off, to fly to a city just for an unpaid internship interview.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, for sure they hired you because of the outfit.
No, the outfit. No, the outfit was absurd. Like, I was wearing pointy toe, shiny diesel shoes. Like, I remember what I wore because I was so proud. I remember thinking, like, this is going to be an upload on Facebook. Like, I am looking New York. And I was so enthusiastic in the interview. I was like an air traffic controller. I was flying around the office. I was introducing myself to everyone. They must have thought I was insane, but I was so excited at the opportunity. And I think at the time I thought, oh, I have nothing to lose. Like, my script had been since I was 15, 16 years old that I was going to do a political science major. I would then go to law school. And that was like my narrative. And I didn't even know what that meant, but I just felt that was the narrative that like people seemed to respond really well to. And a very close friend of mine, who's one of my best friends, Melissa, she was studying PR in Toronto, and she said, you would be a brilliant publicist. And I didn't even know what that meant. She said, you're so good at connecting people. You love being around people. Like, that's what you need to do. Like, that is your calling. And I said, okay. So I started, like, that kind of was in the motion. And then I saw this Us Weekly article and I thought, wait a minute, can I do both? And I started working for Lizzie and Jonathan in New York. I was 20. And 3 years later, I was partners with Jonathan. And then 4 years after that, I acquired the company.
And was that, this is somewhat for personal reasons, was that like a turbulent time of transition? Like, were you intentionally making moves, or was it like just happening in some sense?
So this is what happened. So Jonathan, who had been kind of this illustrious figure in New York PR, and just to give you a little bit of, because when I say PR, it's very abstract. I think it's also like the same challenge we have around emergency preparedness. It's like a very abstract thing to understand. You're like, what does that mean? We were helping brands work with celebrities. So we were creating marketing strategies, using the power of celebrity and influencer to generate press for a brand, whether it was a hotel, a nightclub, a product, a service. And we were really good at that. And in fact, Jonathan was the best at that. And in 2012, 2011, I should know my dates better, we did a TV show on E!, a docudrama called The Spin Crowd. And it was executive produced by Kim Kardashian. And it was chronicling kind of life behind the velvet rope. Jonathan was obsessed. He loved it. He wanted to be on TV. He knew that that was going to be something that was going to change his life. I never felt as comfortable. I felt like much more comfortable behind the scenes. And it put me in this situation. We did one season. And I, you know, it wasn't an awful experience, but I look back and think, oh my God, like, you have to give so much. People think that reality TV is easy. They think, oh my God, these people, they just show up and they get filmed. It's like you have a 20-person crew who is relying on you to produce content and to make content that is engaging and entertaining and shows a lot of yourself, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think that was my challenge, is that I was really scared to show, you know, the bad and the ugly. I was totally there to show the good. So after we did that show, Jonathan immediately realized that he wanted to pursue TV. And I decided, this is just the beginning of our business and I want to take it to the next level. So we went our separate ways.
And then, so you were doing PR for brands. Did you always have the idea of launching a brand yourself?
I thought about it. I didn't know much about the actual operations that would go behind, like my, all of my experience, you know, I've been doing it 16 years in entertainment, you know, marketing and branding. It was all kind of on the front end. So the operations, supply chain, I had so many things that I was intimidated to even think about. So I had ideas on, you know, notepads, and I would brainstorm and I would get to that level. And then I would think, I'm not sure I can do this. And I had this friend, Josh, who I've known for over a decade. He was a brilliant entrepreneur, and we met 18 months ago, and we had both been noodling on different ideas, and he was noodling on an idea in the emergency food space. So how do you take freeze-dried food and make it taste good? And at the same time, we both had friends and family who had been in these emergency situations, both large-scale emergencies. So I have friends who've lost their homes in the wildfires in California. I have friends who've been through traumatic experiences in hurricanes along the Atlantic coast. And we also had friends who had been in household emergencies, so fires, floods. And the common denominator in all of these stories was a fundamental lack of preparedness. So Josh and I sat there and we thought, what brand is speaking to American families right now about basic safety, about a basic emergency safety? And we started working with the most incredible first responders and preparedness experts. And they all said the same thing. We have failed our mission to get people prepared because they're just not listening. So we took that on and spent the last 2 years developing the brand.
So that you guys met about 2 years ago. And that's, or was that prior to?
So we had been friends for years, but the point of we're going to do something in emergencies, which started in the food space, you know, 19 months ago, it was a food brand. And then we went through all the different iterations that, as you know, you go through when you're developing a business. Is it going to be this? Is it going to be that? Let's test this. Oh, that doesn't test well. I had 40 of my friends come over and try the freeze-dried food. Half of them spit it up. The other half had stomach issues. Like, it was a disaster. I was like, oh shit, there goes that plan. Like, we're gonna come up with a new plan.
And so, I mean, emergency, like the emergency sector of preparing for an emergency obviously has become much more relevant today, but it seems like kind of a foreign concept even 2 years ago,
right,
for you guys to be talking through.
Well, you know, it is and it isn't. So if you look at what's been going on, you know, globally, specifically the United States, over the last 10 years outside of COVID, 310 million Americans have been living in a federally declared disaster area at some point during those 10 years. So it's nothing new, but one of the challenges around emergency preparedness is that half of the people who are not prepared think that there's nothing they can do to prepare for an emergency. And the other cohort think that an emergency is not going to happen to them. So those are the challenges you face when talking about emergencies. And as we know, as we've seen, unless there is an immediate threat, no one's acting. If there's no immediate threat of financial consequences or immediate harm, people are reluctant to act. So our challenge is, how do you take something as abstract as emergency preparedness and make it actionable? Like, what can you do? When people say get prepared, well, what the hell am I preparing for? You know, where do I start? So our challenge over the last 2 years was, how do we make this idiot proof? How do we make this so easy and so turnkey that a busy mom or dad can plug into Judy and have not only the physical products, but also the toolkit and the resources and the education to prepare their family for big emergencies and small.
I also feel like you're in one of two parties. You either over prepare,
right,
and you're like a doomsday prepper.
Totally.
Or you just never do anything.
Yeah.
Or purchase anything, which is what I'm in.
Me too.
Like
pre-developing Judy, I was so underprepared. I didn't even know where my fire extinguisher was. And we had this big meeting with the fire chiefs in California, and they were talking about the CO2 detector. And I was raising my hand, like, do I have a CO2 detector? They're like, we hope you do. Like, it was such a space that I'm an anxious person. I've always been an anxious. So I avoid. I'm like, how do I avoid thinking of things like worst case scenarios? I'm like, oh, let's put that in the back burner. And I think there's so many people like me out there that just don't want to think of the unexpected.
Yeah. I mean, it's not it's not your top at the top of your list for fun activities.
Right.
To think about worst case scenario.
Right.
For your entire life.
But it's interesting though, because you know, there's an appetite to be prepared. Think of how much time and energy is spent on baby proofing your home. Think of how much money is spent on security systems. Think of how much money is spent and time and resources spent on personal safety and insurance. So we're in the same world, but when it comes to actual natural disaster or emergency preparedness, there has been a block. And obviously with COVID-19, we all realize now that we're vulnerable to emergencies. And the goal and the mission is, okay, let's change this conversation and start preparing now for whatever is coming our way.
I feel like you guys also, this is from the outside looking in, like, I love the branding of Judy. Initially when I saw the brand, I just loved the entire energy behind it. Like, what was the thought process in terms of developing the brand to try and make it more approachable for people to even prepare or want to engage with something like that?
So, well, thank you for saying that. We went through so many iterations of branding to try to figure out what the tone was to talk about emergencies. Because the fear was, if we made it, we knew it needed to be something that could fit into your life and not feel tactical. It needs to feel highly functional, very Marie Kondo-ified in terms of organization. So it's hyper-organized. But it couldn't be overtly designed. We didn't want it to ever be fashionable. Because in some ways, if you have a fashionable emergency kit, it minimizes the importance of what you're doing, which is saving your life, saving your family's life. And then you don't take the education and the content seriously. So it was this fine line of constant testing and figuring out what works and what doesn't from a color perspective, from a brand identity perspective. I'll say the name was really a breakthrough for us. We kept talking about the persona of Judy, and I think we all have Judys in our life. Maybe they're called Karen, maybe it's a Steven, but like the Judy in my life is that type A person who's got hand sanitizer, three extra pairs of socks, and like, you know, unlimited Smarties like in their purse. Like we all have that grandmother or that aunt who's hyper organized and 10 minutes early for every family function. That is Judy. Like the persona of Judy is the person who's super prepared. And we wanted that to be personified in a brand.
And in terms of developing the brand, did you guys partner and work with an agency that specialized in the brand development? And I'm just curious, again, somewhat personally, because it seems like you guys developed such a holistic brand, like from the look to the messaging and also even the interactive aspect of the brand and the service aspect of it. I think it's so interesting that it is such a complete package to me, again, looking in from the outside.
Thank you. Well, we began working with Red Antler about, I would say, 11 months into our development process. And they were incredible. I mean, we went through so many different kind of processes with them to get where we are. And one of the key learnings for us was 3 months into the development, we met with this woman named Soraya, who now kind of runs Judy's masterclass and all of our education. And she said, if you do anything around emergency preparedness, you need to have the education and the know-how. It's even more important than the kit. And I thought, oh God, I'm not going to tell my investors that, because you know, we're running a business. And that has really stuck with me, that yes, it's great to have an emergency kit, but the education is key. But what we have found is that Judy as a physical product becomes the centerpiece and the genesis for the conversation. So families are sitting around their dining room or their living room, looking at the Judy, unboxing the Judy, talking about their emergency evacuation plan. You know, how many people out there have sat around and tried to evacuate their home in under 2 minutes? Have they checked that the upstairs windows are open and that you could safely evacuate if you needed to in the event of a fire? Do the kids know who the emergency out-of-state contact is if the phone lines are jammed? You know, all of these things, and even in the beginning, in COVID, we were having, in New York City, we were having phone issues. I was not able to get phone, like I was not able to access local people in my area because the phone lines were jammed. And that's part of the reason why you need an emergency out-of-state contact. So someone can call someone in a neighboring state and they can relay information back to your family. That's a really hard, abstract idea to somehow convey to a community, to your customers. So you need scenarios, you need examples, and you need to put a lot of resources into building out content that makes sense and is actionable and that you'll actually remember.
And in terms of the education piece, like what was the idea in terms of continuing the conversation with customers of Judy and people that are interacting with the brand? Because I know that is a big piece.
So what we did was we made Judy completely digitally connected. So when you go into our website, you're able to put in your zip code and it auto-populates to all the things that you're vulnerable to in your given area. So we know that people who live in California don't want information on hurricanes because that's not something that they're really vulnerable to. They want to hear more information on earthquakes. They want to hear information on wildfires. So customized, personalized information around vulnerabilities was key. So we also knew the delivery mechanism of how that information was sent to them was critically important. We did a ton of, you know, testing and speaking to people all across this country, and we realized that text messages were best for us. People wanted bite-sized information on their phone. So when COVID-19 first hit, we were sending out information that we were pulling from the CDC and the World Health Organization, but in bite-sized form. Here are the three things you need to do to prepare your household. And that information is ever-changing, but we were able to provide it in a way not only nationally to everyone in the country, but also segment different populations. So we're not sending, you know, hurricane season starts in 2 weeks, June 1st. So only people that are vulnerable to Atlantic hurricanes are going to receive that information. We're not going to send that out to all of our subscribers. We also made the decision to make that service completely free. So if you go on judy.co, you can put in your cell phone number and receive all this tips, all this content completely free of charge.
That's amazing. And it seems to me, like talking with you, that you have a very long-term and strategic viewpoint of the brand and building the brand in a way that really creates value for people in their daily life, but obviously in this specific area. Like, how do you balance the long-term view with the need to attract new customers and run the business on the short term?
So it's a great question. And I'll say that we talked about this earlier, having a co-founder has been so critical to the success of the business, because you're able to divide and conquer. And you know, when sometimes you get into the daily minutiae of the business, you know, running your team, you know, investors, you know, building out all of the different elements that it takes to keep the engine going, you lose sight of the longer, like the long-term vision. So having a co-founder and being able to have those conversations every day of, okay, what is the business decision that's going to drive us forward? We have so many, as you can imagine, products and services that we are developing right now. One of which, an immediate one, is subscription. So some of the pain points around emergency kits is half of the products are consumables, so food and water. The other half are expirable, so things that expire and need to be replenished. So we have a ton of customers who are emailing us saying, great, this lasts for 3 years or 4 years, but I've already gone through my masks. I've already gone through my hand sanitizer. I've already gone through all the Neosporin and the Band-Aids. My kids are under 10 and they're playing in the playground. So we're building out a subscription program where we can refill their kits and keep them emergency ready 365 days a year.
And in terms of how you structure the team, I'd imagine that it's somewhat interesting balancing, again, the product development and also the education piece. Like, how did you guys think about the team structure in that sense?
So I have been spearheading product development, and I did it in conjunction with our team of emergency preparedness experts. To be honest, in the early stages, I tried to do it, you know, with minimal consultation, and I got myself into like a state of paralysis where I was like, what am I doing? Like, I was putting things all over our living room and figuring out, okay, if I do the hand crank radio in this package, like, what do I need? And I would consult people, and I thought, you know what, I need to work with experts. So we spent 6 months, spent hundreds of hours working with leading preparedness experts to figure out what is the best configuration based on all global emergencies. So we have three SKUs right now available at judy.co, and we have the safe, which is this kind of orange box you see that has six different cartridges inside of it and has over 24 preparedness products. We consider this almost to be the home appliance of preparedness. Then we have the traditional go bag. And then we have a smaller one, which is designed for a car or potentially a millennial who's living alone in an apartment. It has eight different preparedness products. The foundation of any emergency kit is food, water, and first aid. And then everything else is an add-on.
And talking about your career trajectory, did you make the transition into running Judy full time? And was that the vision when you guys originally came up with the concept, or are you still split between your other business and Judy as well?
I would say it is probably an 80-20. I have an incredible partner at my marketing company. One of the things that have been really successful for us is engaging with celebrities and influencers through my network. What you learn around emergencies is every single person has been affected. So many of the people in California who we're targeting have been involved in emergencies. So from a celebrity influencer perspective, I have those relationships through my marketing company that we're able to really leverage those relationships and also just generate some buzz around what we're doing. And what we have learned is we need to be strategic and we need to think out of the box to get the message out there around preparedness because people aren't listening. So we just launched a Tiger King.
I saw that.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was an unofficial Tiger King collaboration. We added tiger stripes onto our Judy safe and had John Finlay, who's Joe Exotic's first husband, kind of be the face of it. And it was 100% of the proceeds went to America's Food Fund. And we did it because we needed to get people's attention. People aren't listening to the mandates out there to be prepared. They're not building out an emergency kit. They're not talking to their family about emergencies. So we need to think of really cool ways to get that message out there. And using pop culture as a vehicle has been really successful for us.
And talking to the fact that your marketing company kind of aligns also with what you're doing in terms of Judy, getting the name out there, getting the brand out there. What are some of the lessons that you've learned or things that surprised you in terms of launching a brand from the ground up that you might not have seen while running the marketing company and helping brands from the other side? Because I think that's interesting to me, like knowing that you've helped so many brands build buzz and also gain market share in general. Like what were the things that you didn't necessarily see on the back end?
I think having a, you know, more of a lifestyle business that, you know, had slow growth and I built up my team versus this fast growing, every day you're iterating startup. I am so much more empathetic to founders and entrepreneurs who are running these, you know, kind of D2C startups that require so much iteration. Like, no wonder they're not thinking of these crazy out of the box ideas, or no wonder they don't have the bandwidth to take on influencer and celebrity because they're so busy putting out all the fires. It is just, and I was talking to a friend about this the other day. I mean, there is, entrepreneurship has become almost a little bit of like a celebrity status in some ways, where it's been glamorized in so many ways. I mean, as you know, it's like, it is the hardest, most challenging. I mean, you have to push yourself. There are days when you wake up and you're like, oh my God, am I going to get through this? Yeah. It's also incredibly rewarding. You know, the wins are incredible. And, you know, the days where you're like, okay, what am I going to do next? Are incredibly challenging. So I think of the companies I've worked with over the years, and I think, okay, I should have cut them a lot more slack, because these things, you know, the pace of it is just unbelievable.
And how have you, knowing that, how have you changed maybe your lifestyle to kind of accommodate for that pace of things? Like, how have you taken care of yourself and managed yourself through those iterations and through the pace of it?
So I would say I'm going to go back to this, having a co-founder. You know, some people out there, some people who may hear this podcast say, oh, I don't know if I need a co-founder, I'm a self-starter. For me, you know, your co-founder almost becomes your therapist too. Because when you're in the business and something goes wrong, you can't demoralize your team by talking about all the things that could go wrong. And you want to be able to talk it through with someone. And there's only so many times you can call on your advisors. for me, I find it incredibly therapeutic. You know, Josh and I speak 50 times a day. We start, you know, we have a morning call, we have an afternoon call, and that has really kept me on track. We're also, both in my marketing company and at Judy, we make sure we have off hours. So on the weekends, if something's important to us, turn your phone off. I mean, my phone exists on airplane mode after 8 o'clock every night because I need that. To have those 2 hours. Like I'm not speaking to anyone. I'm reading a book, vegetating, watching Tiger King. I am, you need that time to turn off. And I had not done that in my previous business. When I was launching my marketing company, I was ambitious and I felt guilty. I felt guilty not using every available minute to grow the business, and it wore me out and I was exhausted and I began to resent the business. So I've been really good at time management.
I feel like also the difference in terms of building a marketing business compared to a brand is a marketing business, you're running on cash flow. And in some senses, there's shorter term kind of repercussions and also rewards for your actions. Whereas I think a brand just in general takes much longer to build and it's like the harder work is controlling your emotions and actions to keep your eyes on the long-term goal. And I always find it fascinating to learn how people kind of balance their personal struggles while building the brand over time.
Well, and not only in completely agree with you, and then also making sure that you are remaining constantly optimistic about the business and inspiring your team and your investors and your surrogates to continue moving forward. You know, whether you're having the bad day or not, you need to continue motivating your team. So it's definitely a challenge. It's also exhilarating at the same time. You have those days where you're like, oh, I found my stride. And then you have the bad days. And I have a ton of mentors and advisors. Some are connected to Judy formally and some are informal, who I pick up the phone and say, okay, I've got a supply chain issue, or I have an issue with someone on my team. Like, can we walk through it? And I think prior to launching Judy, I was hesitant to lean on those relationships. And now I'm like, okay, I'm calling.
Why do you think you were hesitant prior to lean on those?
Because the stakes never felt so high that I needed to. I grew my business from 2000. You know, I started with Jonathan and Lizzie in 2005. We have clients that we've been working with for over a decade. And we've been very successful in the industry that we're in. So there has never been, the stakes have never felt, the stakes are high, but they've never felt as high as it is in a startup mode. When you're selling, you know, a product, you know, growing your distribution channels, growing your team, all within a matter of weeks, matter of days. There are so many decisions that need to be made in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I feel like the change is so massive from your previous business. I guess another question that I have is based around running two things at once. Like, have you found that challenging, or is it more in the sense like your marketing business is kind of helping feed Judy and vice versa, like the fresh perspective from Judy is helping feed the marketing business? And is it a challenge for you to stay above kind of thinking high level through both aspects simultaneously?
The marketing company has served me very well in developing Judy because it allows me to think of campaigns and strategies and have the confidence to execute them. So anytime I take a call with, you know, a soon-to-be entrepreneur or someone who's building their business, most of the time they want to pick my brain on influencer and celebrity strategy. How do I engage celebrities? How do I engage influencers? The current agency I'm working with is awful. What do I do? And I give them all sorts of hacks of okay, if this was my business, this is what I would do. This is how I would leverage celebrity and influencer. So it has been, I haven't found it, it hasn't distracted from the success of Judy, but it's given me the confidence. Also, when you're, you know, raising money, investors like to know that you've got powerful surrogates behind you. And they want to know that you can get your product in the hands of influential people. And I have spent my 16-year career being an expert at just that. So it has served me really well. It's given me the confidence to take risks and do things like, you know, the Tiger collaboration, and know that we could hit the right tone with it.
It's funny. It's like most people would probably tell you that running two businesses simultaneously, especially in the startup world, is like not okay or not even possible. But in your sense, like, or in your situation, that's like your competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Is that you have this machine behind you that you know that you can plug into if needed or when it's right. And that it also fed your experience of like knowing the executional skills to get things to move.
Right. Like in essence, Judy has been able to benefit from hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in free marketing services, essentially. And will continue to do so, you know, as we continue to grow the business. So that certainly gives me the advantage, and one inspires the other. You know, I'm working on a new campaign through my marketing company. Oh, great. This person could also fit into Judy. You know, I'm constantly thinking of how can I merge and connect.
And is there anything coming up from Judy, like in the next 6 to 12 months, that you're super excited about in terms of either product development or campaign development that you can talk through?
Judy subscription is something we're really excited about because we've had so many customers and brand fans who've asked about it. So we're kind of in the, I would say 50% there, and we'll launch it in the next 3 to 6 months.
That's awesome. I definitely will be purchasing a Judy kit. And again, love the brand and everything that you guys have built. So I'm excited to watch you guys continue to grow.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show.
Bread received.